Amanda.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a Flatpack History of Sweden.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Elsa.
And this is episode 3, Stones, Farming, and Sheep.
That's three things any respectable country needs.
Yeah. If you've ever played any computer games like Age of Empires or a similarly sort of strategy-based computer game, those are some of the first few things that you need if you want to grow your little empire or your little country like Sweden.
How important are the goats in those computer games?
Goats or sheep, I guess. Yeah, they're pretty important. Goats and sheep, quite important. And I think even in Age of Empires, you could capture other people's sheep and take them over. So that was really handy. But
there we go. Yeah. I didn't know.
Yeah, so last time we saw Sweden, we saw how Sweden got its hands on at least the first of these things with the beginning of the Stone Age. Sweden had emerged from a long icy period to reach an average of 20 degrees in Julys of the year by the time our current period begins, which was roughly 4,500 BCE, so over 6,000 years ago.
Yeah, we are now entering the New Stone Age, or the Neolithic period. It's a period of monumental change, both literally and figuratively, for Sweden, its landscape, geography, and its people. The adoption of farming and a few cultural changes are going to develop society massively, making Birkaskogskvinnan, who we met in the last episode, look quite out of date. But before we get into the Neolithic period, it is time for our Swedish phrase.
Hooray.
Chris, shall I pick one this time since you got to choose tur i uturen last time?
Yeah, sure.
Great. Well, I'm going to choose the phrase skita i det blå skåpet.
Okay.
It literally means shit in the blue cupboard. Yeah. And it's used, I know, it's strange. It's used when someone has gone too far or has made a fool of him or herself. Like if when you were a kid, you were having a party when your parents were away, and then all of a sudden you hear them come back early, then you've skitit i det blå skåpet.
That's very odd.
You've pooped in the blue cupboard. You've made a fool of yourself. No one quite knows where this phrase comes from. It's thought to have maybe originated from how in the 1800s, nice cupboards, usually for storage of linen and tablecloths, were often stored in blue cupboards. And obviously you shouldn't defecate where the nice things are, then you make a fool of yourself.
That's very odd, but I will try and remember it, I guess.
It's a good one. I like it. Maybe it's because I'm so silly. But yeah, that was our Swedish phrase of the week. And back to the Neolithic period. How do we even begin?
So we're now back some 6,500 years ago, and Sweden has started to get a more settled population. The hunter-gatherer life of the Swedes we met in the last episode is slowly making way for a life where people have settled in farming communities with fields where they grow crops and the animals they keep as livestock. And of course, just as last week, these early Swedes don't call themselves Swedes. They're not one people yet, but they are using roughly the same techniques to survive. Although, as we'll see, there is some argument about how and why they started to farm.
Yeah, and this is a major revolution. As we'll see, this has an impact on so many aspects of people's lives and the very nature of the society they lived in.
Indeed, and it's not just in Sweden where a transition from hunter-gatherer communities to settled populations and farming is ushering in a new era in history. This is happening all across Europe and other parts of the world, but it's not happening really at the same time. There's sort of, yeah, because 6,500 years ago to 6,000 years ago, that's 500 years difference. Mm-hmm. But because it's so long ago in the past, you can seem to get this, you know, view, oh, it's obviously happening at the same time, but it isn't. It's happening, it's a transition that takes place across many, 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 many years.
Yeah, and there's some debate about how and why this transition from hunter-gatherer to farming took place, isn't there?
Yes, certainly in a Swedish context. It used to be believed that the ideas of farming reached Scandinavia probably through immigration and word of mouth, spread of knowledge. And then people who were hunter-gatherers caught on with these ideas and settled down to a life of farming.
Okay, so a bit like if some hunter came back to his group and said, hey guys, I met some people in the forest today and they were talking about this new trend, farming, where you live in one place and you plant stuff and you keep animals in a pen next to your house. Should we give that a go? Was that how it happened?
Yeah, I think grossly simplified, but yes. However, archaeologists and historians now think it's more likely that people who were already farmers immigrated to Sweden, probably from what's today northern Germany, and continued their farming lifestyle there. But then over time, the farming community overtook the hunter-gatherer community because they were more successful at living and surviving. But the two would have coexisted during a period.
Okay, so rather than the same people switching from hunting to farming, it's now believed to have been a case of how some people were hunters, some people were farmers, and over time the farming took over.
Yeah, and this is all happening around 4000 BCE. So also it should be mentioned that even though farming was probably introduced to Sweden from what is today Germany, European farming is thought to originate from Greece and Turkey, where it's been going on for thousands of years before it reached as far north as the lofty heights of the Baltic Sea. But farming wasn't just slow to reach present-day Sweden, but it also didn't take hold across the whole country at first. Archaeologists have noticed a difference between coastal areas and the inland areas. In areas inland, farming took hold earlier, whereas in coastal areas, people continue to mainly live off seal hunting and fishing for a lot longer.
Yeah, and there is an article in the Journal of World Prehistory. It's called the Stone Age of Northern Scandinavia, a review. And that talks a lot about this. So for context, when they're talking about northern Scandinavia, that's everything north of Blekinge and Skåne. So if you see a map of present-day Sweden, if you see that slight bulge at the bottom, cut that out, and then northern Scandinavia, that would be everything north of that.
Okay, so cut off the lumpy bit and everything north of that.
Yeah, so the article in Journal of World Prehistory says agriculture was tried in the most southerly areas of northern Scandinavia in the early Neolithic, but seems to have disappeared or been absorbed into a much more successful local hunting-fishing type of adaptations, apart from a few areas in central Sweden where the conditions for agriculture were particularly favourable. And a full-scale agricultural economy was first introduced almost 1,000 years later at the end of the Middle Neolithic. At this time, changes can be seen in the location of settlements, social organization, and material culture. End quote.
Boom. So the fundamental changes really are about how societies relate to their settlements and material culture because of this difference in areas and things in Sweden. Things are happening at different places and different times. But Neolithic farming slightly, it's not just plonk down your farm and I'm a farmer now. It's quite different to how you would do farming in southern Sweden today, because Neolithic farming involved clearing forested land, come up to your forest, pick I want to farm here, and then you'd start what's usually called slash and burn. So as it suggests, you start by chopping everything down, piling it all in the middle of the field and letting it dry out in the clearing you've created. And then right before it gets to the rainy season, you set it on fire.
Ooh.
Yep, flames everywhere. And then, because the rains are just about to come, it turns all the burnt wood into ash, and you've got this ready-made fertilizer layer of ash, which is really great at producing food. And it also happens to help eliminate pests and weeds. So you've got sort of a ready-made flat pack farming area for you to use. And then you can start planting all your crops, keep your animals and cattle there, and sheep and goats to live and plow your land with simple tools. And you've even got some of them that are so domesticated that you can turn them into your animal slaves, like the oxen that would be pulling the plows.
Yeah, but as you can imagine, with all this burning that Chris is describing, This is quite an intensive and invasive method of farming. And after a few years, if you do this, you really do tire the earth out.
Oh, poor soil.
Yeah, it really is poor soil. The soil gets exhausted and the productivity of the land decreases. So after a while, you have to move to a new part of the forest and repeat this whole process all over again.
Oh, that's a shame, because that's kind of a big effort for everybody to do. So while society has started to become a bit more settled, they're still moving every 5 years or so. So they're still partly nomadic, as they're really abusing their land, really, which is a shame. But apart from changing where they are physically living, you can certainly say that the introduction of farming didn't just change where they were living and how they lived off the land, did they also?
No, as we said earlier, the introduction of farming and a more settled population, it changed the very nature of people's life. Lars Sundström, who's an archaeologist at the Society Archaeologica Uppsalensis, now that was Latin, I'm sorry for my pronunciation, but they're based in Uppsala.
And Uppsala is one of the big universities in Sweden.
Indeed.
It's like a Harvard or Oxford, Cambridge.
Yeah, it'll certainly get mentioned when we quote historians and scientists across this podcast, because they're a very dominant, academic force. Anyway, back to how it changed people's lives. Mr. Sundström, he raises the point that the introduction of farming changed the way people thought around the concept of ownership. So the theory goes that if you settle down and start farming, then that's an investment. You cultivate your field, you have cattle that you need to grow before you slaughter them, or
that milk them.
It takes time before they grow wool if they're a sheep, for example. All of that is an investment. So you want to make sure that it's yours when it's ready. And that means that you introduce the concept of ownership.
Yeah, because it's thought that, on the contrary, in the previous hunter-gatherer communities, such as Becca Skudskvinnan and her time, everybody was mobile, everybody needed to work together to survive. So ownership was much less of a thing. It was sort of the group's axe or the group's animal that we're going to kill.
Yeah, and if you're not investing time and effort over time by staying in the same place, it just means that you're less fussed with who owns what. But with the investment in time and resources that the introduction of farming and settled communities bring about, a new way of thinking around owning develops. Historians theorize that this has an impact on the concept of family as well. In hunter-gatherer communities, relationships could be more fluent, and which kid belonged to what parent was less important, since it was the group as a whole that mattered. However, in settled farming communities, because of the idea of ownership and property, and by extension, inheritance, the need to control relationships became greater. It's during this time that we see the introduction of relationships between couples, like marriage, being about a lifelong partnership and about combining two lots of property. And there's also a greater need to clearly set out what child belongs to which parent. Or really, if let's be honest here, it's really about clarifying which man has fathered what child, since that has an impact on ownership and inheritance. And thus, the long and harrowing need to control female sexuality was born, it seems. Yay!
Yep. So
This is in audio format, so you can't see the facial expression I've got on at the moment.
Yeah, she's also quite sad at this. Because this really is an all-encompassing societal shift that we see in this period. It's changing everything. It's going to be a fundamental change to how society works on a day-to-day basis. In fact, you can also see how this wasn't the only aspect of dividing society into gender roles. The farming and the ploughing with the oxen that we mentioned earlier. Yep, you guessed it. Just the men get to do that because it's fun. And riding the oxen or whipping the oxen or doing all the manly roles. So you can really see that farming didn't just add grains to the early Swedes' diet. It was much more than that. This concept of ownership also brings in a much darker side of the time, as not only the gender roles and the segregation happens, it also means that warfare is going to spring up between these different groups as a result of competition for the land, or you've got a much better ox than I have, so I'm going to come and take it, or there were agricultural problems because of all the slashing and burning and ruining the land, especially in the areas where it isn't so great to begin with. You could even have overpopulation in some of the hubs of civilization, something we really haven't seen before this concept of ownership of land and objects begin.
Yeah, it's a complex tale, really. Farming added a lot of these concepts into the lives of the Neolithic people. It was making life easier, but it also made it much harder. But I also want to mention another important and relatively new discovery about Swedes in this period. By studying genetics, both in present-day Swedes and in skeletons, scientists have found that Swedes can trace a large part of their genetic heritage from a group known as the Yamnaya.
Woohoo, the Yamnaya. Spoilers, we are jumping a little bit ahead in terms of the overall time period. This is much towards the end of the Stone Age, but it sort of fits into this whole societal narrative. So the Yamnaya, they arrive in Sweden around 5,000 years ago, so at the end of the Stone Age, 3,000 BCE, that sort of time. And they've come all the way from what's today Ukraine. They're mainly young men who move across Europe with carts and their domestic horses that they bring with them. And they sweep across the continent, and they did this sometimes in a violent way. They eradicated existing communities of Stone Age people through violence, but also from the weird, new and wonderful diseases they've brought with them. Mm-hmm. In fact, in some ways, it was similar to when Europeans arrived in the Americas. But in Sweden, for some reason, their arrival seems to be more peaceful.
Oh, that's nice to hear. Yeah, I was fascinated to hear just how much of our DNA can be linked to the Yamnayas. And actually, that's not just in Sweden. Almost all Northern Europeans have a genetic heritage from them.
That's really good, because if you do one of those Ancestry.com DNA tests, you can we'll probably have some Yamnaya in us.
Other DNA tests are available.
I'm sure they are. But the most important thing they probably brought with them was their language. It's from this period that the Yamnayas get to bring their amazing Indo-European languages with them. The languages they spoke didn't really sound like what's spoken in Sweden today, far from it, but it is the root of modern Swedish. In fact, it's almost all European languages, including English, have their roots in these Indo-European languages.
That's amazing. So in the previous episode, we met the first Swedes, and now we're getting the first hints of the Swedish language. There's a lot of things that are being introduced at this very early stage. But the Yamnayas also brought with them a few other things that I thought was important to mention, namely beer and the gene that means that you can tolerate lactose. So it's thanks to the Yamnayas that I can drink beer and eat cheese. My favorite things! Thank you, Yamnayas.
Yes, thank you, Yamnayas. I think that we could turn that into sort of a badge or something. But yeah, so we really do have a lot to be thankful for the Yamnayas for. But if we're done saying thank you to the Yamnayas, the fact that you can drink cow's milk without getting sick, I think it would be good to finish this episode by mentioning a few of the things that physically still connect us to this late Stone Age period. Some archaeological finds, yay!
Sure, go for it, Chris.
So, across southern and central Sweden, quite a few objects from this period have been found in archaeological digs. They're scattered all around southern Sweden, modern Scandinavia, but they include things like ceremonial axes, quite a few of them. They had a bit of a thing for shaping them like a boat, because you know, we know how important the boats are with all the fishing and the travelling. They were typical for the Yamnayas, actually, as well. I think around 300 of these have been found across Scandinavia. So considering they've survived like 5,000 years, that's quite impressive. In Trosetra, north of Stockholm, about 300 clay figures resembling humans and animals have been found. And these are also 4,500 years old. So they're, again, a little bit later in the Stone Age, or possibly pushing into the area where we're getting metals. But it's amazing that they're showing what the people thought of themselves and the animals that lived around them. But much more back to the early Neolithic is probably one of my favourites, which is the Arlander moose. This is a ceremonial axe. It's quite ornate. It's got a moose head sort of carved into it out of the rock. It's about 20 centimetres long, so two-thirds of a ruler. It's between 4,000 and 6,000 years old. And that's one of the also things when you're looking at these periods, you sort of, even the best science will say, it's between 4,000 and 6,000 years old. That's quite a long...
That's a big time scale.
That's between us and the Romans. You know, at some point someone made this, but still, it's definitely within our period that we're talking about today.
Yeah.
So as the name may or may not suggest, it was found in Arlanda, which is north of Uppsala, that university stronghold that we just briefly mentioned. It's probably actually thought to have originated from present-day Finland or Russia.
And not just these things that archaeologists have found, there are also reminders of this early era in our history in the Swedish landscape in the form of graves, because this era saw the introduction of large burial grounds. You can see långhögar in English. I haven't really found a good translation, but it would be something like long heaps. And they're from around 3,800 BCE. Actually, it looks a bit like a bread loaf under the earth, making a mound that you can still see around today. They're usually made out of one or two large chambers that have then been covered in earth and sometimes with stone. They're quite common in Western Europe at this point and come from the Neolithic age.
Yeah, so you go to the ground, dig a little hole, put your bodies in it, and then sort of make a little lump on the top so you know where it is. So you can come back and say hi to grandma later on. Which is quite interesting. And so another, I think I've seen a translation where they're called passage graves. I think that's what you might call them in English. From, again, around 3,300 BCE in the Swedish landscapes, especially in an area in the south, central-ish Sweden. There's two big lakes called Värnen and Värtan. And a little later, we get these dolmens, which are sort of basically larger and much more stone in them, sometimes having a stone roof. But again, still covered in grass. Fewer of these have been found in Sweden, but there are definitely still some left in the south of the country.
Yeah, so even though this period might seem like ages ago, I mean, it literally is thousands of years ago, we can still see the remains of their time in Sweden today.
Yeah, and it's not just the physical remains in the forms of the axes and graves, but we can still see the effects of the change in the lifestyle during that period. There's still a lot of farms around in South Sweden and all over Sweden, really. And whilst not many of the Swedes are still farmers, because it takes a lot less people, we've got machinery, which means that there's a lot less people who are actually farmers, but the farmland is still there. And the fact that people began living in Sweden during this late Stone Age period and they were settled down and began farming really forms the bedrock of what is Sweden today. And speaking of rock, stone tools were used on the more substantial rock formations in the country to produce some fascinating rock carvings. And we're going to delve a lot deeper into the cultures of the Neolithic Age next week in a special cultural focus type episode. But we should mention these amazing things ever so briefly now. The rock carvings and paintings are mainly of wild animals, boats, and other humans. They've been found at 16 places in northern Sweden and have been dated to around 5,500 to 4,000 BCE, so right in the middle of this Neolithic age of discovery and innovation. Mm-hmm. And the largest and best known is Namfossen in Ångermanland, with at least 300 carvings having been found by some rapids that were formerly close to a river mouth. Amazing that you can have all these, this scale and depth of rock carvings when previously there hadn't been any found. And over 300 in one place shows a real dedication and effort to making them and ensuring that they were done properly. But as promised, much more on this next week where we can talk about this stuff without just skipping over it.
Yeah, indeed. With that was our little preview, or perhaps spoiler, well, preview for next week. And speaking of next week, it is probably a good time to start wrapping up. So this week we have seen that it was immigration that brought something new with it that eventually became an integral part of life, something that we will no doubt see many times during the course of this podcast.
Absolutely. Farming changed the way that Swedish people looked at their own objects and at themselves and at them as a society. But it also helped to change their diet and slowly edging them away from the nomadic lifestyle that they had before. It also, sadly, helped introduce violence, but it did bring new animals. And these animals also affected all the gender roles that we spoke about previously. And all in all, it's really, you know, helped lay the social and economic basis of Sweden's agricultural life that's lasted well into the 20th century.
Mm.
So thank you for listening. Until our next episode, please do follow us on Twitter. Give us a review on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, whatever platform you're listening to.
Yeah, please do leave reviews now that we're properly up and running. You can find us on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and hopefully now also on Google Podcast. And of course, if you want to get in touch, you can also send us an email on flatpackhistorysweden@gmail.com. If Twitter isn't your thing. So until next time, thank you and bye-bye.
Hej då.
Hej då.